Tass's stomach. The boy yelps. Drusius laughs and kicks him again. A roaring fills my mind, like water rushing up against a dam. I think of Blackcliff's centurions, their casual, daily beatings that ate away at us when we were yearlings. I think of the skulls who terrorized us, who never saw us as human, only as victims for their sadism bred into them, layer by layer, year by year, like complexity builds so slowly into wine. And suddenly, I'm leaping for Drusius, who has, to his detriment, gotten too close. I snarl like a crazed animal.
He's a child!
I use my right hand to punch the mask in the jaw, and he drops. The rage within breaks free, and I don't even feel the chains as I rain down blows.
He's a child who you treat like garbage, and you think he doesn't feel it, but he does, and he'll feel it until he's dead, all because you're too sick to see what it is you do.
Hands tear at my back, boots thunder, and two masks veer into the cell. I hear the whistle of a truncheon and dodge it, but a punch to the gut takes the wind out of me, and I know that any moment I'll be knocked into unconsciousness.
Enough!
The dispassionate tone of the warden cuts through the chaos. Immediately, the masks back away from me. Drusius snarls and rises to his feet. My breath comes heavy, and I glare at the warden, letting all my hate for him, for the Empire, fill my gaze.
The poor little boy getting vengeance for his lost youth. Pathetic, Elias.
The warden shakes his head, disappointed.
Do you not understand how irrational such thoughts are? How useless? I shall have to punish the boy now, of course. Drusius,
he says crisply,
bring a parchment and a quill. I will take the child next door. You will record Veturius's responses.
Drusius wipes the blood from his mouth, jackal eyes shining.
With pleasure, sir.
The warden grabs the scholar child, Tass, cowering in the corner, and pitches him out of the cell. The boy lands with a sickening thump.
You're a monster!
I snarl at the old man.
Nature weeds out those who are lesser,
the warden says.
Dominicus again, a great man. Perhaps it is good that he did not live to see how sometimes the weak are left alive to totter about, sniveling and puling. I am no monster, Elias. I am nature's assistant, a gardener of sorts, and I'm very handy with shears.
I strain against my chains, though I know it will do no good.
Damn you to the hells!
But the warden is already gone. Drusius takes his place, leering. He records my every expression, while beyond the locked door, Tass screams.
Chapter 37. Liar. The feeling in my bones when I awake in the cellar safe house cannot be regret. But it is not happiness either. I wish I could understand it. I know it will only eat at me until I do. And with so many miles yet to travel, I can't afford for my focus to erode. Distraction leads to mistakes, and I've made enough of those. Though I don't want to think that what happened earlier between Keenan and me is one of those mistakes. It was heady, intoxicating, and filled with a depth of emotion that I did not expect. Love. I love him. Don't I? When Keenan's back is turned, I swallow the concoction of herbs that Pop taught me about, one that slows a girl's moon cycle so that she cannot get with child. I look to Keenan, quietly changing into warmer clothing in preparation for the next leg of our journey. He senses my regard, and comes over to where I'm lacing my boots. with a shy affection that's so very unlike him. He caresses my cheek. An uncertain smile lights his face. Are we fools? I want to ask, for finding comfort in the midst of such madness. I can't bring myself to say the words, and there's no one else to ask. A desire to speak to my brother sweeps over me, and I bite my lip angrily to keep my tears at bay. I'm certain Darin had sweethearts before he began apprenticing with Spiro. He would know if this unease, this confusion, was normal. What's bothering you? Keenan pulls me to my feet, holding tight to my hands. You don't wish that we didn't? No, I say quickly. I just, with everything going on, was it wrong? To find an hour or two of bliss in such dark times, Keenan says. That's not wrong. What is there to live for, if not the moments of joy? What is there to fight for? I want to believe in that, I say. But I feel so guilty. After weeks of keeping my emotions bottled and corked, they explode forth. You and I are here, alive. And Izzy is dead. Darin is in prison. Elias is dying. Keenan wraps an arm around me and tucks my head beneath his chin. His warmth, his wood smoke and lemon scent soothe me immediately. Give me your guilt. I'll hold on to it for you, all right? Because you shouldn't feel this way. He pulls back just a bit and tips my face up. Try to forget the anxiety for a bit. It's not that simple. Just this morning, I say, you asked me what the point was in being human if I didn't let myself feel. I meant attraction. Desire. His cheeks go a bit red and he looks away. Not guilt and fear. Those you should try to forget. I could help you forget. He cocks his head and heat flashes through me. But we should get moving. I muster a weak smile and he releases me. I cast around for Darin's sim, and by the time I buckle it on, I'm frowning again. I don't need a distraction. I need to work out what in the skies is going on in my own head. Your emotions make you human, Elias said to me weeks ago, in the Saren range. Even the unpleasant ones have a purpose. If you ignore them, they just get louder and angrier. Keenan? We start up the cellar stairs and Keenan unhooks the lock. I don't regret what happened, but I can't just will away the guilt. Why not? He turns back to me. Listen. We both jump when the cellar door opens with a blistering squeal. Keenan draws, notches, and aims his bow in one motion. Hold! A voice says. The figure raises a lamp. It's a young, curly-haired scholar. He curses when he sees us. I knew I saw someone down here, he says. You need to leave. Master says there's a marshal patrol on the way, and they're killing every free scholar they find. We do not hear the rest. Keenan grabs my hand and drags me up the steps and out into the night. That way. He nods at the tree line to the east of us, beyond the slaves' quarters, and I fall into a jog as I follow him, my pulse frantic. We pass through the woods and turn north again, cutting through long, fallow fields. When Keenan spots a stable, he leaves me and disappears. A dog barks, but the sound is suddenly cut off. A few minutes later, Keenan returns, a horse in tow. I'm about to ask about the dog, but at the grim look on his face, I keep silent. There's a trail through those woods up ahead, he says. Doesn't look heavily travelled, and the snow's falling hard enough that our tracks will be covered within an hour or two. He pulls me in front of him, and when I keep my body apart, he sighs. I don't know what's wrong with me, I whisper. I feel like I can't find an equilibrium. You've been carrying too much weight for too long. All this time, liar, you've led. You've made difficult decisions. And perhaps you weren't ready to. There's no shame in that. And I'll gut anyone who tells me different. You did the best you could. But let go now. Let me carry that weight for you. Let me help you. Trust that I'll do the right thing. Have I steered you wrong yet? I shake my head. My disquiet returns. You should believe in yourself more than this, liar, a voice within says. Not every decision you've made has been a bad one. But the ones that mattered, the ones where lives hung in the balance, Those decisions were wrong. The weight of it is crushing. Close your eyes, Keenan says. Rest now. I'll get us to Koff. We'll get Darren out, and all will be well. 3 nights after we leave the cellar safe house, we stumble upon a half-dug mass grave of scholars. Men, women, children, all tossed carelessly within, like offal. Ahead of us, the snow-capped peaks of the Nevernese range blot out half the sky. How cruel their beauty seems. Do they not know the evil that has taken place in their shadow? Keenan quickly urges us past, moving even after the sun is up. When we're well away from the grave and traversing a high, forested bluff, I catch a glimpse of something to the west, in the low hills that lie between us and Antium. Tents, it looks like, and men. Campfires, hundreds of them. Skies, I stop Keenan. Do you see that? Aren't those the Argent Hills? It looks like an entire damned army out there. Come on. Keenan pulls me onward, worry driving his impatience and igniting my own. We need to take cover until nightfall. But the night only brings more horrors. Hours into our journey, we come so suddenly upon a group of soldiers that I gasp, nearly giving away our position. Keenan pulls me back with a hiss of breath. The soldiers guard 4 ghost wagons, so called because once you disappear inside, you might as well be dead. The wagons' high, black sides prevent me from seeing how many scholars are within, but hands clutch at the bars on the back window, some large and others far too small. More prisoners are loaded into the last wagon as we watch. I think of the grave we passed earlier. I know what will happen to these people. Keenan tries to pull me onward, but I find I am unable to move.
Liar! We can't just leave them!
There are 12 soldiers and 4 masks guarding those wagons, Keenan says. We'd be slaughtered.
What if I disappeared?
I look back toward the wagons. I can't stop thinking of those hands.
The way I did in the tribal camp, I could...
But you can't. Not since... Keenan reaches out and squeezes my shoulder in sympathy.
Not since Izzy died.
At the sound of a shout, I turn back to the wagons. A scholar boy claws at the face of the mask, who drags him forward.
You can't keep doing this to us, the boy screams as the mask tosses him in the wagon. We're not animals. One day, we'll fight back.
With what? The mask chuckles. Sticks and rocks.
We know your secrets now.
The boy throws himself against the bars.
You can't stop it. One of your own smiths turned against you. And we know.
The sneer drops off the mask's face, and he looks almost thoughtful.
Ah, yes, he says quietly. The rat's great hope. The scholar who stole the secret of Ceric Steel. He is dead, boy.
I gasp, and Keenan puts a hand over my mouth, holding me steady as I flail, whispering that I cannot make a sound, that our lives depend on it.
He died in prison, the mask says, after we extracted every bit of useful information from his weak, miserable mind. You are animals, boy. Less than that, even.
He's lying, Keenan whispers, pulling me bodily from the trees. He's doing it to torment that boy. There's no way the mask could know if Darren was dead.
What if he's not lying? I say. What if Darren is dead? You've heard the rumors about him. They're spreading further and further. Maybe by killing him, the Empire thinks they can crush those rumors. Maybe...
It doesn't matter, Keenan says. As long as there's a chance that he's alive, then we have to try. Do you hear me?
We must keep going.
Come on. A lot of ground to cover.
Nearly a week after leaving the cellar safe house, Keenan comes trudging back to camp, this one beneath the gnarled, leafless boughs of an oak tree. The Commandant has gotten as far as Delphinium, he says. She slaughtered every free scholar.
What about slaves? Prisoners?
Slaves were left alone. Their masters no doubt protested the loss of property.
He looks ill as he says it.
She cleared out the prison, held a mass execution in the city square.
Skies.
The darkness of the night feels deeper and quieter somehow, as if the Reaper walks these trees and every living thing knows it but us. Soon, I say, there will be no scholars left.
Lawyer, Keenan says. She's heading to cough next.
My head jerks up. Skies, what if Elias hasn't gotten Darren out? If the Commandant starts killing the scholars up there?
Elias left 6 weeks ago, Keenan says, and he seemed damned confident. Perhaps he's already broken Darren out. They might be waiting for us in the cave.
Keenan reaches into his bulging pack. He pulls out a loaf of bread, still steaming, and half a chicken. Skies know what he did to get it. Still, I can't bring myself to eat.
Do you ever think about those people in the wagons?
I whisper.
Do you ever wonder what happens to them? Do you care?
I joined the resistance, did I not? But I can't dwell, liar. It accomplishes nothing.
But it's not dwelling, I think. It's remembering. And remembering is not nothing. A week ago, I'd have said the words out loud. But since Keenan took the yoke of leadership from me, I've felt weaker, diminished, as if I grow smaller by the day. I should be thankful to him. Despite the marshal-infested countryside, Keenan has safely avoided every patrol and scouting party, every outpost and watchtower.
You must be freezing.
His words are soft, but they pull me from my thoughts. I look down in surprise. I still wear the thick black cloak that Elias gave me a lifetime ago in Sarah. I pull the cloak closer. I'm all right. The rebel rummages around in his bag and eventually pulls out a heavy, fur-lined winter cloak. He leans forward and gently unhooks my cloak, letting it fall. Then he drapes the other over my shoulders and secures it. He doesn't mean ill. I know that. Though I've pulled away from him over the past few days, he's been solicitous as ever. But a part of me wants to fling the cloak off and put Elias's back on. I know I'm acting the fool, but somehow Elias's cloak made me feel good. Perhaps because more than reminding me of him, it reminded me of who I was around him. Braver, stronger, flawed certainly, but unafraid. I miss that girl, that liar, that version of myself that burned brightest when Elias Veturius was near. The liar who made mistakes. The liar whose mistakes led to needless death. How could I forget? I thank Keenan quietly and stuff the old cloak in my bag. Then I pull the new one closer and tell myself that it's warmer.
Chapter 38 Elias. The night silence of Koff Prison is chilling. For it is not a silence of sleep, but of death, of men giving up, letting their lives slip away, of finally allowing the pain to wash over them until they fade to nothingness. At dawn, the children of Koff will lug out the bodies of those who haven't lasted the night. In the quiet, I find myself thinking of Darren. He was always a ghost to me, a figure we strained toward for so long that though I never met him, I feel tied to him. Now that he's dead, his absence is palpable, like a phantom limb. When I remember that he's gone, hopelessness washes over me anew. My wrists bleed from my manacles, and I cannot feel my shoulders. My arms have been outstretched all night. But the pain is a sear, not a conflagration. I've dealt with worse. Still, when the blackness of a seizure falls over me like a shroud, it is a relief. But it is short-lived, for when I wake in the waiting place, my ears are filled with the panicked whispers of spirits, hundreds, thousands, too many. The soul catcher offers me a hand up, her face drawn.
I told you what would happen in that place.
My wounds aren't visible here, but she winces when she looks at me, as if she can see them anyway.
Why didn't you listen to me? Look at you.
I didn't expect to get caught. Spirits whirl around us, like flotsam spinning about in a gale. Shaver, what in the ten hells is going on?
You shouldn't be here.
Her words are not hostile, as they would have been weeks ago, but they are firm.
I thought I wouldn't see you until your death. Go back, Elias.
I feel the familiar pull in my belly, but fight it. Are the spirits restless?
More than usual.
She slumps.
There are too many. Scholars, mostly.
It takes me a moment to understand. I feel sick when I do. The whispers I hear, thousands upon thousands, are scholars murdered by marshals.
Many move on without my aid, but some are so anguished. Their cries upset the djinn.
Shaver puts her hand to her head.
I have never felt so old, Elias, so helpless. In 1,000 years as soul catcher, I have seen war before. I watched the fall of the scholars, the rise of the marshals. Still, I have not seen anything like this. Look.
She points to the sky, visible through a space in the forest canopy.
The archer and the shield maiden fade.
She points out the constellations.
The executioner and the traitor arise. The stars always know, Elias. Of late, they whisper only of the approaching darkness.
Shadows gather, Elias, and their gathering cannot be stopped.
Cain spoke those words, and worse, to me just months ago in Blackcliff. What darkness?
The Nightbringer,
Shaver whispers. Fear rolls over her, and the strong, seemingly impervious creature I've become accustomed to vanishes. In her place is a frightened child. In the distance, the trees glow red. The Djinn Grove.
He seeks a way to free his brethren,
Shaver says.
He seeks the scattered pieces of the weapon that locked them away here so long ago. Every day he gets closer. I sense it, but I cannot see him. I can only feel his malice, like the chill shadow of a Nevenese gale.
Why do you fear him? I ask. If you're both djinn.
His power is 100 times my own, she says. Some djinn can ride the winds or disappear. Others can manipulate minds, bodies, the weather. But the Nightbringer, he possesses all of these powers. More, he was our teacher, our father, our leader, our king. But,
she looks away.
I betrayed him. I betrayed our people. When he learned of it, skies, in centuries of life, I have never known fear like that.
What happened? I ask softly. How did you betray? A snarl ripples through the air from the grove.
Shaver!
Elias,
she says, anguished.
Shaver!
The snarl is a whipcrack, and Shaver jumps.
You've upset them. Go!
I back away from her, and the spirits jostle and team around me. One separates from the rest, small and wide-eyed. Her eye patch still part of her, even in death.
Is he?
I say in horror.
What? Be gone!
Shaver shoves me, knocking me back into burning, painful consciousness. My chains are loose, and I'm curled on the floor, aching and freezing. I feel a fluttering on my arms, and a pair of large, dark eyes regards me, wide and worried. The scholar boy.
Tass? The warden ordered the soldiers to loosen the chains so I could clean your wounds, Elias.
Tass whispers.
You must stop thrashing.
Gingerly I sit up. Izzy. It was her. I'm certain of it. But she can't be dead. What happened to the caravan? To Lyra? Afia? For once I want another seizure to take me. I want answers.
Nightmares, Elias?
Tess's voice is soft, and at my nod, his brow furrows. Always.
I also have bad dreams.
His gaze skitters briefly to mine before breaking away. I don't doubt it. The Commandant manifests in my memory, standing outside my jail cell months ago, just before I was set to be beheaded. She caught me in the middle of a nightmare.
I have them too, she said.
And now, miles and months from that day, I find that a scholar child condemned to Koff prison is no different. So disturbing that the three of us should be linked by this one experience, the monsters crawling through our heads. All the darkness and evil that others perpetrate upon us, all the things we cannot control because we are too young to stop them. They have all stayed with us through the years, waiting in the wings for us to sink to our lowest. Then they leap, ghouls on a dying victim. The Commandant, I know, is consumed by the darkness. Whatever her nightmares were, she has made herself 1,000 times worse. Don't let the fear take you, Tass, I say. You're as strong as any mask as long as you don't let it control you, as long as you fight. From the hallway, I hear that familiar cry, the same one I've heard since I was thrown into this cell. It starts as a moan before disintegrating into sobs.
He is young.
Tass nods in the direction of the tormented prisoner.
The warden spends much of his time with him.
Poor bastard. No wonder he sounds mad half the time. Tass pours spirits onto my wounded fingernails, and they burn like the hells. I stifle a groan.
The soldiers,
Tass says.
They have a name for the prisoner.
The screamer,
I mutter through gritted teeth.
The artist.
My eyes snap to Tass's, the pain forgotten. Why? I ask quietly. Do they call him that?
I have never seen anything like it.
Tass looks away, unnerved.
Even with blood as his ink, the pictures he draws on the walls, they are so real, I thought they'd come to life.
Bleeding, burning hells. It can't be. The legionnaire in the solitary block said he was dead. And I believed him, fool that I am. I let myself forget about Darin. Why are you telling me this? A sudden, horrible suspicion grips me. Is Tass a spy? Does the warden know? Did he put you up to it? Tass shakes his head rapidly.
No, please listen.
He glances at my fist, which I realized is clenched. I feel sick that this child would think I'd strike him, and I unfurl it.
Even here, the soldiers speak of the hunt for the Empire's greatest traitor, and they speak of the girl you travel with, Lyra of Serra, and the artist. Sometimes in his nightmares, he speaks too.
What does he say?
Her name,
Tass whispers.
Lyra. He cries out her name, and he tells her to run.
Chapter 39 Helene. The voices on the wind wrap around me, sending jolts of unease down to my core. Koff Prison, still 2 miles distant, makes its presence known through the pain of its inmates.
"'Bout bleeding time!" Farris, waiting at the supply outpost outside the valley, emerges from within. He pulls his fur-lined cloak close, gritting his teeth at the freezing wind.
"'I've been here 3 days, Shrike!'
There was flooding in the Argent Hills. A trip that should have taken 7 days instead took more than a fortnight. Rathana is little more than a week away. No bleeding time. I hope my trust in the cook was not misplaced. The soldiers at the garrison there insisted we go around, I explained to Farris. 10 hells of a delay. Farris takes the reins of my horse as I swing down.
Strange, he says. The hills were blocked off on the east side, too. But they told me mudslide.
Mudslide because of the flooding, likely. Let's eat, stock up, and start tracking Veturius. A blast of warm air from the roaring hearth hits us as we enter the outpost, and I take a seat beside the fire as Farris speaks quietly to the 4 Orcs hovering. As one, they nod vigorously at whatever he's saying, casting nervous glances in my direction. 2 disappear into the kitchens, while the other 2 tend to the horses.
"'What did you tell them?' I ask Farris.
"'That you'd purge their families if they spoke of our presence to anyone?'
Farris grins at me.
"'I assume you don't want the warden to know we're here.'
"'Good thinking. I hope we do not need the warden's aid in tracking Elias. I shudder to think what he'd want in trade.' We need to scout the area, I say. If Elias is here, he might not have gone in yet. Farris's breathing hitches and then continues as before. I glance at him, and he appears suddenly and deeply interested in his meal. What is it?
Nothing.
Farris speaks far too quickly and mutters a curse when he realizes that I've noticed. He sets down his plate.
I ate this, he says, and I don't care if the Commandant's spy knows.
He gives Arvitas a dark look.
I hate that we're like dogs hunting a kill, with Marcus cracking his whip at our backs. Elias saved my life during the trials, and Dex's too. He knew what it felt like after...
Farris looks at me accusingly.
You've never even spoken of the 3rd trial.
With Arvitas watching my every move... The wise path would be to give a speech about loyalty to the Empire right now. But I am too tired and too sick at heart. I hate it too. I look down at my half-eaten food, my appetite gone. Bleeding skies, I hate everything about it. But this isn't about Marcus. It's about the survival of the Empire. If you can't bring yourself to help, then pack your things and go back to Antium. I can assign you to another mission. Farris looks away, jaw clenched.
I'll stay.
Quietly I release a sigh. In that case, I pick up my fork again. Maybe you can tell me why you clammed up when I said we should scout the area for Elias. Farris groans.
Damn it, hell!
You were stationed at Koff at the same time as him, Lieutenant Candlon, Avatar says to Farris.
You, Shrike, were not.
True, Elias and I ended up at Koff at different times when we were 5ers.
Did he go somewhere when things in the prison were too much?
There's an intensity to Avatars that I've rarely seen.
An escape.
A cave, Farris says, after a moment. I followed him once when he left Koff. I thought...
Skies, I don't know what I thought. Probably something stupid. That he'd found a hidden stash of ale in the woods. But he just sat inside and stared at the walls. I think he was trying to forget the prison.
A great emptiness opens up inside me when Farris says it. Of course, Elias would find such a place. He wouldn't be able to bear Koff without it. It's so like him that I want to laugh and break something at the same time. Not now. Not when you're so close. Take us there. At first, I think the cave is a dead end. It looks as if it's been abandoned for years. But we light torches anyway and search every inch of it. Just as I'm about to order us to move out, I catch a glimpse of something glimmering deep within a crack in the wall. When I go to pull it out, I nearly drop it. 10 hells! Faris grabs the bound, crossed scabbards from me. Elias's Sims! He's here. I ignore the dread pooling in my stomach. You'll have to kill him. And pretend it is the adrenaline rush of a hunt. And recently, the spiders have covered everything else. I hold up a torch to the webs in the crack. I look about for signs of the girl. Nothing. If he's here, then Lya should be too. And, Avitas adds, if he left all of this here, he can't have believed to be gone for long. You're on watch, I say to Faris. Remember, this is Veturius we're dealing with. Keep your distance. Don't engage. I need to go down to the prison. I turn to Avitas. I suppose you'll insist on coming with me. I know the warden better than you, he says. It is unwise to go barging into the prison. There are far too many of the Commandant's spies inside. If she knows you're here, she'll try to sabotage you. I lift my eyebrows. You mean she doesn't know I'm here? I assumed you'd told her. Avitas says nothing, and as his silence grows longer, Faris shifts uncomfortably beside me. I see the faintest of cracks in Harper's cold facade. I'm not her spy anymore, he finally says. If I were, you'd be dead by now. Because you're too close to capturing Elias, and her orders were to kill you quietly when you got this close. To make it look like an accident. Faris draws his sim. You filthy traitorous! I hold up a hand to stop him and nod for Avitas to continue. He pulls a thin paper envelope from his fatigues. Nightweed, he says. Outlawed in the Empire. Skies only know where Karis got it. A little bit kills you slowly. A little more, and your heart expires. The Commandant planned to say that the pressure of the mission was too much for you. You think I'm so easy to kill? No, actually. The torchlight throws Avitas's masked face into shadow. And for a second, he reminds me of someone I cannot place. I've spent weeks figuring out how I'd do it without anyone the wiser. And? I decided I wouldn't do it. As soon as that happened, I began misinforming her about what we were doing and where we were going. Why change your mind? You must have known what the mission would entail. I asked for the mission. He puts the nightweed away. I told her she needed someone in close proximity to you, if she wanted to take you down quietly. Faris doesn't sheathe his sim. He's edged forward, his huge body seeming to take up half the cave. Why in the bleeding hells would you ask for this mission? You've got something against Elias. Avitas shakes his head. I had a question that needed an answer. Coming with you was the best way to get it. I open my mouth to ask him what question, but he shakes his head. The question doesn't matter. Of course it bleeding matters, I snap. What could possibly have made you change your alliance? And how am I to know that you won't change it back? I may have been a spy, Bloodshrike. He meets my eyes, and the crack in his facade grows wider. But I have never been her ally. I needed her. I needed answers. That is all I will tell you. If you cannot abide that, then send me away. Or punish me. Whichever suits you. Just... He pauses. Is that anxiety in his face? Don't go into Koth to speak to the warden. Send him a message. Get him out of his domain, where he's strongest. Then do what you wish. I knew I couldn't trust Harper. I never have trusted him. Yet he's come clean now, here, where he has no allies, and I have one at my back. Still I pinion him with my gaze. He doesn't breathe. "Double-cross me," I say, "and I'll rip your heart out with my bare hands." Avatas nods. "I'd expect no less, Bloodshrike." "Right," I say. "Regarding the Warden, I'm not a yearling still wetting the bed, Harper. I know what that monster trades in, secrets and pain disguised as science and reason. But he loves his foul little kingdom. He won't want it taken away. I can use that against him." "Get the old man a message," I say. "Tell him I wish to meet in the boathouse tonight. He's to come alone." Harper leaves immediately, and when we're sure he's gone, Farris turns to me.
"Please don't tell me you believe he's suddenly on our side."
I don't have time to puzzle it out. I grab Elias's things and shove them back in the crack in the wall. If the Warden knows anything about Veturius, he won't share that knowledge for free. He'll want information in return. I have to figure out what I'm going to give him. At midnight, Arvatas and I slip into Koff's boathouse. The broad crossbeams of the roof gleam dully in the blue torchlight. The only sound is the occasional slap of the river against the sides of the boats. Though Arvatas asked the Warden to come alone, I still expect him to bring guards. As I peer into the shadows, I loosen my sim and roll my shoulders. The wooden hulls of canoes clank against each other, and outside, the prisoner transports anchored to the boathouse cast long shadows across the windows. A stiff wind rattles the glass. "You're sure he's coming?" The Northman nods.
"He's very interested in meeting you, Shrike, but..."
Now, Lieutenant Harper, no need to coach our Shrike. She's not a child."
The Warden, as spindly and pale as an overgrown catacomb spider, slinks out of the darkness on the far side of the boathouse. How long was he skulking there? I force myself not to reach for my sim. "I have questions, Warden." "You're a worm, a twisted, pathetic parasite." I want him to hear the indifference in my voice. I want him to know that he is beneath me. He stops a few feet away from me, his hands clasped behind his back.
"How may I serve?"
"Have any of your prisoners escaped in the past few weeks? Have you had any break-ins or thefts?"
"No on all counts, Shrike."
Though I watch him carefully, I see no indication that he is lying. "What about strange activity? Any guards seen where they shouldn't be? Unexpected prisoners coming in?"
"The frigates bring new prisoners all the time."
The Warden taps his long fingers together thoughtfully.
"I processed one myself quite recently. None, however, have been unexpected."
My skin tingles. The Warden is telling the truth, but he's hiding something at the same time. I feel it. Beside me, Arvatas shifts his weight, as if he too senses something off.
"Bloodshrike," the Warden says, "forgive me, but why are you here, in Koff, looking for such information? I thought you had rather an urgent mission, to find Elias Veturius."
I draw myself up. "Do you always ask questions of your superior officers?"
"Do not take offense. I am merely wondering if something might have brought Veturius here."
I notice how he watches my face for a reaction, and I steel myself for whatever he's going to say next.
Because if you were willing to tell me why you suspect he is here, then perhaps I might be able to share something useful.
Avatas glances at me. A warning. The game begins.
For instance, the warden says, the girl he's traveling with, who is she?
Her brother is in your prison. I offer the information freely, a show of good faith. You help me, I'll help you. I believe Futurius is attempting to free him. The light in the warden's eyes means I've given him something he wants. For a second, guilt floods me. If the boy is in the prison, I've made it far more difficult for Elias to get him out.
What is she to him, Bloodshrike? What hold does she have over him?
I take a step toward the old man, so he can see the truth in my eyes. I don't know. Outside the boathouse, the wind picks up. It sighs in the eaves, eerie as a death rattle. The warden tilts his head, his lashless eyes unblinking.
Say her name, Helene Aquila. And I'll tell you something worth your while.
I exchange a glance with Avatas. He shakes his head. I grip my sim to find that my palms are slick on the hilt. As a fiver, I spoke to the warden no more than twice. But I knew, all of the fivers knew, that he was watching. What did he learn about me in that time? I was a child, only 12. What could he have learned about me? Liar. I allow no inflection in my voice, but the warden cocks his head in cold assessment.
Jealousy and anger, he says, and ownership, a connection, something deeply irrational, I believe. Strange.
A connection, the healing. The protectiveness I don't wish to feel. Bleeding skies. He got all of that from one word? I school my face, refusing to let him know what I feel. Still, he smiles.
Ah, he says softly. I see that I'm correct. Thank you, Bloodshrike. You have given me much. But now I must depart. I don't like to be away from the prison for too long.
As if Koff is a new bride he pines for. You promised me information, old man, I say.
I've already told you what you need to know, Bloodshrike. Perhaps you weren't listening. I thought you would be...
The warden looks vaguely disappointed.
Smarter.
The warden's bootsteps echo in the empty boathouse as he walks away. When I reach for my sim, fully intending to make him talk, Avatas grabs my arm.
No, Shrike, he whispers. He never says anything without reason. Think. He must have given us a hint.
I don't need bleeding hints. I throw off Avatas's hand, unsheathe my blade, and stride toward the warden. And as I do, it hits me. The one thing he said that raised the hairs on my neck.
I processed one myself quite recently. Not unexpected, however.
Futurius, I say, you have him. The warden stops. I cannot quite see the old man's face as he half turns toward me, but I hear the smile in his voice.
Excellent, Shrike. Not so disappointing, after all.
Chapter 40 Liar. Keenan and I crouch behind a fallen log and survey the cave. It doesn't look like much.
A half mile from the river, surrounded by hemlock trees, east-facing, with a creek to the north and a granite slab turned on its side 100 yards south.
Keenan nods to each landmark.
It can't be any place else.
The rebel pulls his hood lower. A small mountain of snow grows on each of his shoulders. The wind whistles around us, flinging bits of ice into our eyes. Despite the fleece-lined boots Keenan stole for me from Delphinium, I cannot feel my feet. But at least the storm covered our approach and muted the prison's haunting moans.
We haven't seen any movement. I pull my cloak tight, and this storm is getting worse. We're wasting time.
I know you think I'm mad, Keenan says, but I don't want us to walk into a trap.
There's no one here, I say. We've seen no tracks, no signs of anyone in these woods other than us. And what if Darren and Elias are in there, and they're hurt or starving?
Keenan watches the cave for a second more, then stands.
All right. Let's go.
When we get close, my body will no longer allow me any caution. I draw my dagger, stride past Keenan, and step warily inside.
Darren, I whisper to the darkness. Elias?
The cave feels abandoned. But then Elias would make sure it didn't look like the place was occupied. A light flares from behind me. Keenan holds up a lamp, illuminating the cobwebbed walls, the leaf-strewn floor. The cave is not large, but I wish it were. Then the sight of its emptiness would not be so crushingly definitive.
Keenan, I whisper, it doesn't look like anyone's been here in years. Elias might not have even reached here.
Look. Keenan reaches into a deep crack at the back of the cave and pulls out a pack. I grab the lamp from him, my hope flaring. Keenan drops the pack, reaches in deeper, and digs out a familiar set of Sims.
Elias, I breathe. He was here.
Keenan opens the pack, pulling out what looks like weak old bread and mouldering fruit.
He hasn't been back recently, or he'd have eaten this.
And, Keenan takes the lamp from me and illuminates the rest of the cave.
There's no sign of your brother. Brathana is in a week. A lawyer should have gotten Darren out by now.
The wind wails like an angry spirit desperate for release.
We can shelter here for now.
Keenan drops his own pack.
The storm is too bad for us to find another camp anyway.
But we have to do something, I say. We don't know if Elias went in. If he got Darren out. If Darren is alive.
Keenan takes my shoulders.
We made it here, liar. We made it to Koff. As soon as the storm blows over, we'll find out what happened. We'll find Elias and...
No, a voice speaks from the entrance to the cave. You won't, because he's not here.
My heart plunges and I clutch the hilt of my dagger. But when I see the three masked figures standing at the entrance of the cave, I know it will do me little good. One of the figures steps forward, a half-head taller than me, her mask a quicksilver glimmer beneath her furred hood.
Liar of Sarah. Helene Aquila says. If the storm outside had a voice, it would be hers. Gelid, deathly, and utterly unfeeling.
Chapter 41. Elias. Darren is alive. He's in a cell yards from me. And he's being tortured into insanity. I need to find a way into that cell, I muse out loud. Which means I need schedules for guard shifts and interrogations. I need keys for my manacles and Darin's door. Drusius runs this part of the interrogation block. He holds the keys. But he never gets close enough for me to get a good hold on him. No key. Pins to pick the locks, then. I'd need two.
I can help you.
Tass's quiet voice cuts into my scheming.
And there are others, Elias. The scholars in the pits have a rebel movement. The Skirite. Dozens of them.
Tass's words take a long moment to sink in. But once they do, I stare at him aghast. The warden would skin you, and anyone who helped you. Absolutely not. Tass shies like a struck animal at my vehemence.
You said that my fear gives him power. If I help you,
10 hells. I have enough death on my hands without adding a child to the list. Thank you. I meet his gaze squarely. For telling me about the artist. But I don't need your help. Tass gathers up his things and slips toward the door. He pauses there for a moment, looking back at me.
Elias?
So many have suffered, I say to him, because of me. No more. Please go. If the guards hear you and me talking, you'll be punished. After he leaves, I stagger to my feet, jerking at the lancing pain in my hands and feet. I force myself to pace, a once thoughtless movement that has, in the absence of the Telos, transformed into a feat of near impossible proportions. A dozen ideas race through my head, each more outlandish than the last. Every single one requires the help of at least one other person. The boy, a practical voice inside says. The boy can help you.
Might as well kill him myself, then,
I hiss back at that voice.
It would be a faster death, at least.
I must do this alone. I only need time. But time is one of the many things I just don't have. Only an hour after Tass leaves, and with no solution in sight, my head spins and my body jerks.
Damn it, not now!
But all my cursing and stern words to myself are for nothing. The seizure drops me, first to my knees, and then straight into the waiting place.
I should just build a bleeding house here,
I mutter, as I pick myself up from the snow-covered ground.
Maybe get a few chickens, plant a garden.
Elias?
Izzy peers at me from behind a tree, a wasted version of herself. My heart aches at the sight of her.
I hoped you'd come back.
I look around for Shaver, wondering why she hasn't helped Izzy move on. When I grasp my friend's hands, she looks down in surprise at my warmth.
You're alive,
she says dully.
One of the other spirits told me. A mask. He said that you walked the worlds of the living and the dead. But I didn't believe him.
Tristus. I'm not dead yet, I say. But it won't be long now. How did you... Is it indelicate to ask a ghost how they died? I am about to apologize, but Izzy shrugs.
Marshal Raid,
she says.
A month after you left. One second I was trying to save Gibran. The next I was here, and that woman was standing in front of me. The soul catcher, welcoming me to the realm of ghosts.
What of the others?
Alive,
Izzy says.
I'm not sure how I know, but I'm certain of it.
I'm sorry, I say to her. If I had been there, maybe I could have...
Stop!
Izzy's eyes flash.
You always think everyone is your responsibility, Elias. But we're not. We're our own people, and we deserve to make our own decisions.
Her voice trembles with an uncharacteristic anger.
I didn't die because of you. I died because I wanted to save someone else. Don't you dare take that away from me!
Immediately after she has done speaking, her wrath dissipates. She looks stunned.
I'm sorry,
she squeaks.
This place, it gets inside you. I don't feel right, Elias. These other ghosts... All they do is cry and wail, and...
Her eye goes dark, and she spins around, snarling at the trees. Don't apologize. Something is holding her back, making her stay here, making her suffer. I feel an almost uncontrollable need to help her. You can't move on. The branches rustle in the wind. And the whispering of the ghosts in the trees hushes, as if they too wish to hear what Izzy will say.
"I don't want to move on," she whispers. "I'm afraid.